We know that to stand up and say we're 100% secure and we're unhackable or whatever is really not a good idea, because that would be a pretty dubious claim on anyone's part.
Hi, you're listening to the Secure Developer. It is part of the My DevSecOps community, which also includes the upcoming free DevSecCon 24 virtual conference. With great speakers intersecting the dev and security worlds, it's not to be missed. Sign up at devsecon.com. This podcast is sponsored by Sneak. Sneak is a dev-first security company helping companies fix vulnerabilities in open source components and containers without slowing down development. To learn more, visit sneak.io. On today's episode, Guy Pajani, president and co-founder of Sneak, talks to Alyssa Miller. Alyssa is a lifelong hacker, developer, and advocate for strong security and privacy practices. She has built multiple security teams and consulting practices and worked with some of the largest financial service organizations in the world to improve their security programs. She is also an international public speaker and author, reaching out to the community to exchange ideas for securing the digital world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Secure Developer. Today, we have a fun guest, you know, which is not often do I get to actually interview one of my colleagues here, you know, but we have some awesome people here. And we have with us Alyssa Miller, who's been doing great work around sort of DevSecOps, but really has a really interesting kind of path and background to it. Welcome to the show, Alyssa. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. It's pretty exciting.
So, Alyssa, before we dig in, can you tell us a little bit about what is it that you do here at Sneak, as well as how did you get into security, like a little bit of your journey?
Sure. Yeah. So that gets to be a deep story. So first of all, at Sneak, I'm an application security advocate. And really what that means is I'm out in the security community in particular, advocating for better practices in terms of security, really bringing awareness to some of the challenges around application security in particular, DevSecOps certainly, but also just larger community-related struggles, challenges, things that we deal with every day from a security perspective. My path, like so many people in security, it was kind of not what you would expect, and that was certainly not traditional. I mean, I've been a hacker all my life. 12 years old, I saved up a bunch of money with a paper route and ended up buying my first computer. We're talking, I mean, this is late 80s, early 90s. Not most people had computers in their homes. And here's this 12-year-old buys herself a computer, teaches herself basic programming and asynchronous modem communications, which led to me manipulating some things in an old online service called Prodigy that some people might remember. I won't admit to any more than that, but things that might be questionable nowadays. But I never really saw it as a career. In fact, I went to university as a pre-med major. I had fully anticipated I was going to be a doctor, and that was it. And after three semesters of college level chemistry, realized that was definitely not the career path for me, needed to pivot, and discovered that they had a computer science degree. So, okay, I already knew how to program. That should be pretty easy, right? Chased that down. And this is during the dot-com era now. So dot-com is booming and companies were desperate for programmers. And so while I was still in school working on this degree program, I actually got my first job as a software developer for a large, what today we would call them, a fintech firm. I did development for almost 10 years before someone from the security organization approached me and wanted to know if I would come over and be a pen tester, which I didn't know anything about pen testing at that point, but she knew I knew a number of different programming languages and had been developing in Microsoft technologies for the better part of 10 years. I made that transition and that kind of got me started. And within a year or two, I was managing that team. That team ended up being responsible for the entire vulnerability management program across what was a 35,000 employee Fortune 500 company. So, you know, from there, things kind of just take off. And I got tired of seeing financial services, wanted to see the rest of the world, made my way into consulting for quite a while. I worked for a couple different consulting organizations, really focused mostly on application security and at various levels, initially more at the application assessment level, slowly becoming more and more programmatic to the point where probably my last consulting role, was really at a level of working on application security programs at the enterprise level. So now we're sitting down with CISOs and security directors and so forth, who are really trying to figure out, how do I secure these 900, these thousands of applications, maybe in some cases, across my entire enterprise. That was a lot of my career up until more recently. I took a little bit of a step back into more of a generalist role working for a reseller. Still kind of a consulting role, but definitely a broader, again, working at that higher level of kind of the enterprise organization and security strategy, but now covering the full gamut of, okay, how do we deal with cloud security? How do we deal with network security? How do we deal with application security, wireless, across the board? And ultimately, that led me to where I am today with Sneak.
Yeah, well, it definitely is quite a journey from hands-on kind of dev to, you know, like big program inside the company to consulting. So a couple, there's probably like a lot of learnings and changes, you know, in each one of these different steps in the journey. But one that I find closer to the theme we often discuss here is really this kind of transition, might say, out and then back into AppSec, you know, in these last few years. How would you say, like, how different are the two, right? Like, you're focusing on AppSec, you're growing this, and then you're expanding, I guess, kind of the scope of it. Is it like expanding within AppSec, or is there some significant changes, you know, when you go from AppSec to other parts of the threat landscape?
Sure. Yeah, there definitely is. In fact, actually, I would say it's actually a very considerable difference when you get into that broader sense of just an enterprise security program. First of all, first and foremost, you start to realize how many organizations out there don't do any form of their own software development. And so suddenly you're seeing organizations who, for instance, the education space, a lot of these educational institutions, certainly here in the United States, where at a kindergarten through 12th grade level, they don't have a lot of budget and they don't typically have dedicated security personnel. So they're very immature in their processes and they're trying to scrape by and do the best they can with what they've got. So they're definitely not doing software development. They're buying things off the shelf. They're leveraging these days a lot of cloud technology, and in particular from a GCP perspective and a G Suite perspective. You get that exposure. But then even talking to these large enterprises, when you're talking to these security executives in a large enterprise and you realize how small for a lot of them application security is in terms of their wider focus. I ran into certainly numerous organizations that were large, had a fair amount of software development they did, and application security almost didn't even make it on their radar. And so coming from roles where I was always really focused on application security, that was surprising to me. It was a little eye-opening to see just how much of a chasm there was there when you make that shift. And then to realize that, I will say, the organizations that do have strong AppSec programs tend to be the most mature. So coming from a financial services background and in my consulting days, having worked with a lot of financial services organizations, they were very focused on application security because they're doing a lot of their own software development. And even in the supply chain, they're having to be concerned with, what does our software security program look like? And so it becomes a more prominent portion of what they're looking at. Versus if you go to, say, a large enterprise that's in a utility space, you know, delivering electricity and gas and things like that, they're, of course, far less worried about applications and far more worried about their networks and their devices.
Would you say, like you mentioned maturity, but then there's this kind of maturity on the digital transformation sort of continuum, if you will, or like how much of a technology company it is. I think that's like a little bit easier to sort of to understand that if you have less application, then you worry less about application security. For the organizations that do have software, do you think it's indeed a maturity element? Like, is it just about they're sort of not appreciative of the threats or concerns that are there? Or is it like a legitimate perspective on what are the primary risks to their business? I mean, how do you see it?
Yeah, a little bit of both, honestly. So you look at it from how they see application security. Yeah, when software development isn't really your primary thing, there is a certain level of reliance on the vendors that you're buying software from. I mean, everybody's got software. Yeah. And we all need to be worried about software security, but a lot of organizations that aren't doing their own development maybe don't have that deep perspective of all of the implications and threats that go into that space. And so they may do some due diligence, hopefully within their supply chain and at part of their procurement process. But when it comes to day-to-day, they're really reliant on those vendors. It's somewhat legitimate in that, okay, yeah, that's probably not something they need to focus on. And they can, if your security program within procurement in particular is well thought out and well structured, sure, you might be able to take that step back. But I do think there's also a overall maturing process by having to focus on application security as part of your program. I think that helps mature other areas of your program because it gives a little bit different perspective on how you can approach things like even vulnerability management and so forth, where a lot of organizations who are only thinking about network and vendor security, vulnerability management to them is patching. That's the end of the story. Where when you think about application security and software that you've developed in particular, that conversation obviously becomes much bigger and you start to get deeper into the realms of how do we negotiate with business units to remediate their vulnerabilities, because a lot of times their conflicting priorities can be more than just required versions of software or availability concerns. There could be far greater issues there that they're worried about. And so developing those structures and those capabilities to negotiate out those remediations and make sure that they happen, I think that's a maturity level that you get from dealing in an application security program that you don't if application security just isn't something that you have to focus on.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Taking then that last step in the journey, moving back into AppSec, has there been, like, you spent sort of a few years outside of sort of the application security world. Coming back, did it feel different? Like, did you feel like there was evolution in the space? Did it feel like it was pretty much the same?
No, it is definitely not the same. For me, personally, it's very different. Just having now gained a little bit new perspective on some of these things from getting back to more of an enterprise focus that I had way back when I was in fintech, to what I did for a couple of years at this reseller. So there was that. But you look at just the last couple of years, the absolute explosion of cloud native technologies. It's amazing to me. I think about where we were 3 years ago when I'm working for a company that was dedicated application security. That was all the consulting we did. It was it. And I think about what we were thinking at the time and if the problems that we were focused on to where we are now in terms of DevSecOps. DevSecOps, that whole concept, sure, DevOps has been around for better than a decade at this point, but DevSecOps was still really immature just a few years ago. And now we're seeing this explosion of technologies and techniques around how do we really drive security into the pipeline. Things like containers, the way that Docker images have just exploded in terms of their widespread usage and just the sheer number of available images out there. I was literally just heads down today in Docker Hub digging through Docker images, and it's absolutely amazing the growth that we've seen there. And so that's become so much more commonplace. And then we get into things with orchestration like Kubernetes and so forth. And what everything there that is really driving just a whole new approach to how we think about and deploy and move forward. And that's changed so much just in the last 2 years.
Yeah, definitely kind of more has grown into the scope of this world. So I think that's actually like a really good segue into another topic that I was keen to dig into, which is, you mentioned DevSecOps and the sort of breadth, and buzzwords are, a blessing and a curse, right? They sort of, they mobilize a movement, but it's really kind of hard to embody the complexity that most of these concepts have in a single short word like DevSecOps. I know one of your latest projects or sort of pushes was precisely in that area, was basically to try and kind of define DevSecOps and kind of put that down into a portal. So Lisa, before we dive into the details, where can we find this DevSecOps hub?
Sure. So it's on the Sneak website. Two easy ways to get there. Either you can go to sneak.io, visit the website, and under the resources tab, you will see the DevSecOps hub listed there. Or you can just simply go to sneak.io/DevSecOps. And either will take you right into the hub.
tell us a little bit about it. Like, I think we're going to take a little bit of a walk through this, but, you know, sure. What is this sort of DevSecOps portal?
Yeah, so DevSecOps portal, we've actually called it the DevSecOps hub at this point, is really, it's our way of reaching out and helping organizations who are still trying to digest, what do we do to bring security more effectively and seamlessly into a DevOps pipeline? Kind of like I mentioned before, DevOps has been around for better than a decade now, but security is still very much lagging behind in how do we bring ourselves into that space and what are the right strategies we should be following. And so when we look at this DevSecOps hub, it was really our way to start to provide tangible, useful materials that organizations can leverage, whether they're just beginning a journey into DevSecOps or they're somewhere down that path, but they're really looking for how do we take that next step? How are we going to level up from where we are today to having a greater capability? Maybe it's greater efficiency. A lot of times they're just struggling with adoption of certain security practices into the pipeline. The focus really of that hub is to elevate the view of DevSecOps as well, because my impression, and I've certainly had these conversations with others who share this view, is we become a little too focused on technology solely when we think about DevSecOps. I'm amazed, and we just had a little bit of a Twitter thread going on this the other day about how often people, developers and security alike, will conflate the idea of DevOps and CI/CD. And they become so focused on this idea of continuous integration, continuous deployment, we need all the tooling and automation to make that happen, that we forget that there's this whole culture that goes along with trying to be a DevSecOps shop. And it's this idea of shared responsibility across those different disciplines and really across the entire business for all aspects of software delivery, whether it's the security of it, whether it's the operational stability of it in the long run, whether it's just the efficiency of delivering that software. All of that is something that we all take a part in, and we need to have those shared goals that we march toward.
Definitely amen to that. And, you know, I think it definitely has been a DevOps or preaching kind of motion, is to remind everybody that DevOps is a culture change. You know, first and foremost, the technologies, the tools, kind of all of those methodologies are really a means to that cultural change, or, you know, the methodologies and the approaches they bring. When you think about that hub, I like the sort of the structure in it. You know, you talk about the thesis of what is, you know, DevOps. You talk about, you know, as you just sort of described, you know, the cultural change that embodies, and you talked about this. And then it sort of splits it into these people, process, technology. That might be like a nice way to sort of split this up a little bit. So let's dig into one of those. What are the key people components that are needed for DevSecOps?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, the people, process, technology, anytime you're going to try to change a culture, first of all, that's a very traditional approach that we've talked for as long as I've been in security, yeah, and even longer. But yeah, that's how you change a culture. So when we think about the people, it's, okay, how do we look at how our people are aligned? What are, first of all, just their goals from a formal perspective? What are we really expecting from them in terms of responsibility? DevOps can't just be, or DevSecOps can't just be, we're putting it all on the developer's shoulders now. They're just going to do it all. So when we think about the people, it's how do we align those various disciplines and those specialties in a way that they really truly feel they all have that responsibility? That's a multifaceted thing that we need to approach. So it's, how do we build empathy between those various roles? And so things where this idea of security champions, that's something that's been discussed. In fact, I believe now it's actually even a requirement in the OWASP SAM model and so forth. But bringing development resources who have a security focus or tie to security together and distributing them across those development organizations. But what about the other way as well? Why don't we have development champions in security and start to actually build that truly cross-functional flow where their jobs on a daily basis, their daily tasks are intertwined? Are our security specialists attending stand-ups? Are they going to sprint planning? How do we involve them? And then from the flip side of that, of course, you do have that involvement of how do we get the development and ops teams involved in terms of when we're making security decisions or we're launching a security initiative, so that we know that we're getting their perspectives on whether it's tooling, whether it's policy, whatever it is. We need that understanding cross-functionally to make this work, because if any one of us is operating in a vacuum and making decisions or implementations on behalf of the other, that's where we see that friction. And then that friction is what causes this whole thing to fall apart. And suddenly this idea of a common structure and shared responsibility around that software delivery starts to become siloed again.
Yeah. And I think definitely sort of, you know, great motions. And you mentioned a bunch of these examples. I guess the portal aims to get concrete, right? Like, it doesn't just sort of raise the questions. It actually offers some answers. Like, what are some examples in the sort of this people space that are kind of concrete examples people might want to sort of apply at home, if you will, or in their org?
Sure. So one of them is this idea of how do you structure your security champions program and what should that really look like? We also delve into in detail the methodology for how you set up some of that job. I don't want to call it job shadowing, because it really isn't. It's actually that day-to-day integration of these various roles working together, but start to establish more of that cross-functional tactical approach to just the daily tasks. So we do dive into both of those pretty deeply. We also there's a lengthy discussion and focus too on just things like training and ensuring that even that training is more than just, hey, we want to train developers in secure coding. No, how do we walk through the development of a formal gamified training program and what that should look like, how you address that at different roles and different levels within the organization, and bring something that's a little more tangible and easy to ultimately adapt for these resources that are ultimately involved in that pipeline in whatever way that they're involved.
So, like, a lot of the specific practices, I guess, that are captured, or, you know, like, how do you apply this? How do you do the change? Would you say, and we're still going to dig into the process and technology sides for examples, but just to see this up, who would you say is the hub oriented at? Who should be reading this? Is this for a security person, for a developer, for someone at the start, at the end of their journey?
It's a little wide ranging, right? I think certainly for our DevOps, we've got DevOps engineers, those who are actually responsible for building out these programs or these pipelines within their organizations, DevOps architects for sure. And then even the leadership that has that responsibility as well. So even moving up a few levels where you may have, whether it's development directors or someone in a security leadership position, we want those people working together on this. And so from an audience perspective, it is meant to touch on key topics and key areas that are going to be top of mind and concerns for those individuals, where they may be seeing their struggles and really trying to address how do they start to work beyond those and leverage their peers in a way that they can bring more of these capabilities together.
Cool. And I guess the people part probably naturally, you know, more senior people or people change as requires a little bit more sort of senior presence, right? An application, although many of the tips are very, very concrete and very practical. Mm-hmm. So shifting to part two, you know, of this trio, which is the process, what are some key process changes that need to happen to implement DevSecOps?
Yeah, so this is where it's focused on the underpinnings of how do we structure our security practices, our development practices, in a sense that we're now setting up things for visibility into the process. We're looking at things like KPIs and so forth. How are we actually going to measure success? What does that look like, both from the software delivery perspective, but also our program itself? How are we really understanding that, yes, we are getting better? We're seeing that idea of continuous improvement start to come to fruition as we continue to hopefully be exploring and maturing what it is that we're doing from a development delivery pipeline. As we start to dig into that, it's really centered around driving repeatable processes that support the involvement of multiple areas of the organization, really starting to think beyond. We call it DevSecOps, which implies developers, operations, and security, right? But how do you start to get the business involved in this? How do you ensure that this is something that across the organization, there's ownership And everyone within that organization is really feeling that they're a part of the success, that they have that responsibility for the success of this program, of the company's overall software delivery. And so that comes from the bottom up, whether it's bringing in business people as part of threat modeling exercises or building beyond that and ensuring that we're doing the right level of reporting. So as we've defined these KPIs, KPIs are great. But if no one's looking at them and no one's reviewing those and we're not constantly assessing that and moving forward, they're meaningless.
It's so tempting to sort of go through this, you know, sort of looking through the portal, which I'm sure would sort of, you know, evolve over time. But, you know, like as it stands today, you talk about the paved road, you indeed talk about threat modeling and measurement. Each of these topics is probably like an episode or half an episode on their own right talking about this. Just picking, if you had to pick a couple, you already mentioned threat modeling. And, you know, if you maybe picked one more to sort of highlight from the process changes, what's your next favorite?
I think just the idea around how we handle vulnerability management. We talk on the hub quite a bit about a couple of different approaches, specifically around what are we doing for software assessment and how does that fit into this? Because traditionally, that has probably been one of the toughest areas for organizations that launch a DevOps model, is we're so used to that pen test or that application assessment being kind of that gate, that last thing that we do before production, and it creates such a slow feedback loop. And that really is one of those things that will break down a DevOps model. Or typically what happens is DevOps continues, you're not getting your assessments, they're working around that. And so really looking at ideas for how do you make penetration testing part of those phases of the pipeline rather than gates between. And then, you know, creative ways to do that, whether it's red teaming, how do you leverage outside sources, the more creative solutions, like even just where does a bug bounty fit into all this? And how can you leverage that as another aspect of your overall security program, not just from discovering vulnerabilities, but then ensuring on the back end that you've opened yourself up for a whole new inflow of data. How are you going to leverage that information and ensure that that makes its way back into your backlog and comes back through again, and that you're addressing those with proper priority and so forth?
Definitely. Again, I'm sort of, you know, tempted to dig in, but I think they all sound like very powerful practices. Like, would you say most of these practices or most of these, you know, sort of process steps in this case, do they need to be an all or nothing? Like, do you think they can be advanced one by one, or is there some critical mass you have to do together?
I don't think there's a critical mass. You definitely don't want to boil the ocean, right? Much like we think about in terms of continuous improvement, the other CI that everyone kind of forgets about. But really, continuous improvement is what our goal needs to be. We in the security world have said for years, we throw out weird sayings like it's not if you get hacked, it's when, and all these things, which the feeling behind that is right. Like the intention is there, but let's put that into something more productive. And that is, we know that to stand up and say we're 100% secure and we're unhackable or whatever is really not a good idea, because that would be a pretty dubious claim on anyone's part. But what we should be doing is constantly working to get better and then being able to measure and validate that we are getting better. So each day that we improve a little bit is another day where maybe that's one less vulnerability that's exploitable within our environment or within our software. And so that just makes it that much more difficult, ultimately, for those attackers to find ways to exploit our software and so forth. And so it's got to be that continuous model, because if you try to sell this as anything other in terms of gaining overall executive and board level support for these programs, it can't be sold as something that has an end date, because you will not succeed. We know the technology landscape is constantly changing, which means our response to it, the threats that we face, is constantly changing. And so all we can continue to do is try to get better and better each day. When it comes to a DevOps or a DevSecOps model, we're looking to improve maturity. What level of maturity is meaningful for one organization versus another, that's something that's very dynamic too. Each organization kind of has their own risk tolerance given their industries, what their business model is. Mm-hmm. And we need to be aware of that too. So I would never be one to say, hey, these are all the steps you have to do. Until you do these, you're not DevSecOps. Well, that would be a pretty foolish statement on my part. And that's a whole level of gatekeeping we just don't need.
Indeed. Talk about shifting technologies, you know, that's sort of a good lead into the third section that we have here, right? Which is technology. So, you know, we talked about people change and culture. We talked about the processes. What's the technology component of DevSecOps? You know, what are we trying to cover here in the hub?
So obviously we can't ignore technology and the tooling either, right? I mean, as much as we become hyper-focused on it, sometimes I can't just shut off to it either. It does have to be acknowledged and it's something we have to look at. And it's really, in terms of the hub, painting a more solid roadmap of what are the technologies that need to be a part of your pipeline and how are they enabling developers and how are they ultimately enabling your software delivery overall. So we kind of start with thinking about developers and let's make life easier for them and ensure that the technologies that we're going to leverage meet their needs and aren't creating additional friction or additional issues, hurdles, obstacles, things for them to overcome. And how do we implement them in a way, you brought up paved road before, that whole idea of how do we make the secure way the way that's the easiest for them to get to a deployment state. It begins at the repository, or you could even say it begins before that. I would argue it even begins in the IDE. We can even go farther back. You could even argue it begins at the user story when we start talking about how we're even managing our backlogs. But wherever we want to begin to focus on that, making sure that we've got the right technologies that meet developers where they live. They're the tools that fit into the models that developers are used to. As we expect developers to continue to push further right into our pipeline and into our deployments, how do we ensure that they've got the right tooling that they're willing to adopt? So that could be tools centered around CI/CD. How are we automating these different phases within the pipeline? What are we doing to ensure that security is a part of each phase, whether it's automated SCA and SAST happening at code commit times or at build times, looking at getting the right tooling and implementing it in the right way. And so to that end, one of the things that we've done with this hub is really focused on calling out very specific technologies and providing some simple guidance, just simple checklists on some key security practices or implementation strategies for leveraging those things. If you're going to be going on that technology journey with a particular solution, having something tangible, whether you want to call it a checklist or a cheat sheet or whatnot, but having those very specific granular tasks or configurations and things that you need to validate about that solution is crucial for anybody. And so we've got a couple of them now, and we're building those out, and we'll continue to build them out. Again, as new technologies become available or grow in popularity, we want to make sure that the information that we have out there related to that is fresh as well.
Yeah, and I think probably a non-obvious decision is that the technologies, when you sort of look at the way they're sorted, they're not focused on, it's not technologies as in sort of static analysis, you know, sort of SEA and such, but rather they're the DevOps or the developers context of technologies. They're CI/CD, they're the source code, they're orchestration. So they're more oriented at the security application or sort of how do you apply security, how do you build in security, as you point out, right? Make it easy to make the right decision in each of these stages. Like, I assume that's no coincidence. That's sort of that's the perspective of how to address the technologies.
For sure. That is definitely not a coincidence. And that's exactly it. We in the security world really need to get out of this idea that we're going to build a bunch of tools and force them down developers' throats and say, this is what you're going to use and this is how it's going to be. We do need, like I said, to meet them where they live. And where they live is they think in terms of IDEs and repositories and build automation. And these are all the things that are meaningful to developers that from security perspective, yeah, we talk SAST, DAST, RASP, all these acronyms we have for the different cool security tools that we've come up with, but that doesn't mean anything in terms of someone who's heads down day to day in a delivery pipeline. It is no accident that that is the perspective we've chosen to take. Again, thinking even in terms of that empathy, how do I get security people thinking more in line with the other folks that they're ultimately charged with trying to help secure?
Yeah, indeed. So I guess kind of last, but very much not least, I think it's maybe my favorite sort of section of it and also like relates to this podcast. So I think I'm a fan is we have a section called Share the Journey. Tell us a little bit about what goes on in that area, that part of the hub.
Yeah, and this is actually one of my favorite parts too, quite honestly. So what we've done with Share the Journey is taken all of this very wonderful material that we've put together, but we want to show how does that actually get applied in a real world environment? And what are some ideas and strategies that other people have been able to employ? What are other lessons learned that they've encountered through their own journey in DevSecOps? And so to that end, to facilitate that, we've taken a lot of the stories that have been shared here on this podcast with a number of different guests and really looked at what are some of the unique challenges that they've overcome, what are some of the really novel or innovative strategies that they've leveraged, how have they employed some of the technologies and processes that we talk about throughout the hub to really succeed in maturing their own approach to DevSecOps, and highlight those and kind of almost a mini case study, just telling a little bit of their story about what it is that they were able to accomplish, how they did it, and just sharing some of the key highlights or the key insights that came from those stories that they shared.
No, excellent. And I think, you know, if you've enjoyed any of the sort of past episodes, I guess, of this podcast, you know, which hopefully you have, you know, you might find, you know, some of the sort of the content there indeed kind of gets starts with some of these conversations. We've, you know, I've kind of had the pleasure of talking to some pretty smart folks here, and them sharing the journey is helping us all, you know, learn and get better. So listen, we have a lot of smart folks listening to this episode who hopefully, you know, might be up for sharing their own journey or otherwise have opinions about, you know, how can we improve these best practices that we're sharing or tricks that they've learned. If they want to, you know, contribute to their own content or insight, how do they get in contact with you to contribute?
Sure. So there's a few ways. One, certainly through our website, we've got just a simple contact form. They're more than welcome to leverage that. Or if they'd like to email us more directly, contact@sneak.io. would be a very easy way to get in touch with us. Additionally, through social media, we're very active with our Twitter account @SneakSec, definitely at us. You can also at me directly if you want to give a mention to me or follow me on Twitter and reach out. My DMs are always open. My handle is AlyssaM_InfoSec. So certainly happy to interact that way as well. And then finally, through our website as well, you can get in touch with the MyDevSecOps community. Some of our folks, myself included, are very active in that community as well. And certainly that's a great place to share some ideas and thoughts and get more involved and potentially be able to share your own story as part of some of that information sharing that we do through the hub.
Excellent. I hope there'll be like a whole burst of sharing going on here. We really would love to sort of, you know, kind of hear from you. And, you know, as you might have noticed at the sort of the intro to the podcast, this podcast is a part of this MyDevSecOps, right? And there's a whole bunch of ways to share content, to do public talks, to just, you know, engage on the Slack communities and others. So Alyssa, this has been great. And I think, you know, as I pointed out, probably a lot of these different topics are full on sort of episode contents on their own. Before I let you go, I like to ask every guest that comes onto the show, if you have one bit of advice that you would like to give a team looking to level up their sort of security foo, what would that be?
The thing I've been preaching, and I hate to use that term, but get rid of the FUD more than anything else. It's unfortunate that we still, that's a thing, but the fear, the uncertainty, the doubt, and really focus on how what you're doing is going to help enable the business. So if we're talking a security initiative, how is that tied to revenue generation, or how is that going to create cost savings or open up a new business line? If we're thinking from a dev or an ops perspective, those same things come into play. Okay, yeah, we want to leverage a new container environment or a new cloud technology. Wonderful. But how do we sell that in terms of this is what it brings to the business? This is how it's going to move us forward. Ultimately, in terms of whether it's reducing business risk or costs, or it's opening up that new revenue channel for us, those are the things that are in the end most meaningful and are going to be, that's going to be your paved road to getting those initiatives approved.
Ah, that's awesome. I love that. You know, definitely sort of a get rid of that fear, you know, start building, you know, do something positive with your attitude. This has been great. Elisa, thanks a lot for coming onto the show.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks everybody for tuning in. And I hope you check out the DevSecOps hub at sneak.io/DevSecOps and that you join us for the next episode.
Thanks for listening to The Secure Developer. That's all we have time for today. For additional episodes and full transcriptions, visit mydevsecops.io. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or get involved in the community, you can also find us on Twitter at @mydevsecops. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you enjoyed today's episode. Bye for now.